Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Fionnuala Jones, Olivia Fahey and Jean Smullen. Join us all once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi guys.
Hello.
So Jean, tell us what we're going to be talking about.
12 Sleeps to Christmas. Oh, and everybody's going out looking for their wines. And this is the busiest time of the year. The off licenses are all going insane, right?
Yeah.
So I've picked a red and white that goes with Christmas food and a few recommendations. And the white is not a mainstream. It's a Côte du Rhône white. And I think you'll find it very interesting. And the red is Pinot Noir. I mean, to be honest with you, I love Pinot Noir with turkey, seriously, genuinely. But this is a sort of a good value alternative from Chile.
Yeah. OK, fair enough. And right, Olivia, I'm looking forward to you trying to pronounce seeing you were at your Christmas party last night. Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim.
Of the Rohirrim.
Rohirrim.
I may have like put a typo in that.
Such a makey-uppy like Rohirrim.
Well, it's based around the people of Rohan, so they are the Rohirrim.
Yeah, okay.
That's where it kind of comes from. So, yes, it's a new telling of a Lord of the Rings story, which is actually based on characters from the Tolkien appendices. Helm Hammerhand is the King of Rohan, and essentially there is a challenge for the throne. And it's kind of about how he became known as the legend that he is, and they named Helm's Deep after him. So you get to see what he did in order to get that honour bestowed upon him. And yeah, it is done actually as an animation film, and it's also an anime. So it's that Japanese style animation as opposed to the traditional.
Oh, right,
style.
Anime, which apparently, according to Pornhub, is the most popular form of pornography now.
I heard that.
Like it used to be lesbians every year, but now it's anime.
It's
so is this
really
a really, is this like over 18s, this film? Is this,
no. It is more child appropriate than,
okay, all right,
than Pornhub's version. Yeah. But I was very curious to see how were they going to do this, because in your head, when you hear, oh, they're making an anime out of Lord of the Rings, you kind of go, what? But they did a really, really beautiful job.
Okay, fair enough. And the second one is Carry On. Myself and Jean, of course, will just think, oh, Leslie Williams.
Yeah. But,
which for a moment, I was kind of hoping it was that.
Infamy. They all have an infamy.
Yes.
Honestly, I was kind of hoping for that too.
Yeah.
No, this is kind of Die Hard set in an airport where a TSA agent, he gets targeted by these terrorists who basically want him to let a package through the machines, and how he kind of tries to do a John McClane on it and save the day.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's a bit more disappointing, really.
Yeah.
Though I'd like to see the cast of the Carry On in that kind of scenario. That would be fun. Now, Austin Butler's going to be in the American Psycho. My problem with Austin Butler is that no matter what he's in now, I'm just go, there's Elvis acting
yeah.
as someone.
And he just cannot shake the accent. So I don't know how he's going to fare in this. Yeah, it's Luca Guadagnino's new interpretation of American Psycho. Worth noting that they're saying it's not like, they're not remaking the film, the Christian Bale film. They're remaking the book, which is by Bret Easton Ellis. There have been a lot of rumours around Jacob Elordi that he was actually going to be playing Patrick Bateman, the serial killer. But as we said, Austin Butler got it. The script's coming from Scott C. Burns, who did The Laundromat. And again, as I said, they're looking at it as a new adaptation of the novel as opposed to just rehashing the
sure.
film again.
Yeah.
But I mean, respectfully to the book and the man that wrote the book, all people know, because Christian Bale was so good in that role,
yeah.
is the film now. You know what I mean? Like,
I
know more people who've seen the film than read the book. So all it's ever going to be compared to is that, like,
The other film,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, I will say, though, I do think Austin Butler can play a bit of a freak. I just feel like he does have it in him. So if they interpret it like kind of big and boldly enough, which, like, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Luca Guadagnino. But I mean, again, we need to rename my slot like Reboot Corner, because that's all essentially
that
all we're talking about.
Well,
this week.
The thing is, like, the original film and the book was actually very much of its time, and it's about the, you know, the greed is good era and Wall Street and all that kind of stuff. And so if you're going to set it in contemporary America, in Trump's America, well, that's a completely different place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Greed is not good.
It's
all about
different.
People holding hands and hugging each other.
Yeah,
so.
He's going to be a crypto bro or something, I think.
Yeah, Yeah, probably something like that. And Joseph Quinn's going to be George Harrison after like 17 other people were supposed to be George
Harrison.
Yeah,
so this is like, I just don't know if people can't keep secrets or there weren't any non-disclosure agreements or what, but people just keep kind of running their mouths about these Sam Mendes Beatles films. So he's doing 4 standalone Beatles films that are going to star, like, obviously a different actor for each Beatle, and the stories are obviously going to intertwine because, shockingly, they all went on to be in a band together. And I don't think this is 100% confirmed, but it's pretty much nearly confirmed that Joseph Quinn is going to play George Harrison. We found out earlier on that Paul Mescal is going to be Paul McCartney. Ridley Scott was telling everyone again, could not keep his mouth shut at the Gladiator premiere. Ringo Starr ratted out Barry Keoghan. He was like, Barry's taking drum lessons because he's going to play me. I hope he doesn't take too many. And then we have Joseph Quinn as George Harrison. And then Harris Dickinson is the front runner to play John Lennon. Harris Dickinson is going to be in Baby Girl, which isn't out yet, but it's supposed to be getting very good, getting a lot of hype, starring alongside Nicole Kidman. Yeah, so apparently Joseph has been spotted out and about. He's lugging around a guitar because he's also finishing shooting the Fantastic Four, because he's the Human Torch in the new Fantastic Four.
Oh, right.
He's
okay.
Definitely the most, I was trying to think of this when I was coming in, he's definitely the most like successful out of the Stranger Things cast, especially given that he was only in one season. That might be a mild spoiler, sorry. But if you consider that he's not even in the main cast, he's just coming off the back of Gladiator 2. He was in the Quiet Place prequel. He's going to be in this. Like, he's, who is comparable?
Yeah, I think
Millie Bobby Brown, kind of, not really.
David Harbour, maybe a little bit as well.
David Harbour, yeah.
And Finn Wolfhard had the It franchise and what was the other one that he was in?
The Ghostbusters, yeah.
But they were all kids, so I suppose because there probably weren't as many kid roles for them to play, that it was easier for him to kind of get a lot of success very quickly after appearing because he was just a little bit older.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Eamon in Kilkenny says Die Hard 2 was set in an airport, so it's a remake.
That is actually very true. Yeah. I also kind of always forget that Die Hard 2 is also technically a Christmas film, so.
Yes.
Don't start the Die Hard Christmas film.
Yeah,
my
please,
mental health doesn't. My
and a lot of people texting in to give out to me that there's a very distinct difference between hentai and anime porn. Jeez, sorry. Sorry for my ignorance. Sorry to offend all the porn aficionados out there who were talking about, come on, says the texter. There's no point in remaking American Psycho. It's been done. Unless, of course, it's going to be Carry On American Psycho. another music biopic. How did this genre kick off? Has there been even one that was kind of good?
Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rocketman, I think, is one of my favourite kind of like musical biopics that I've seen ever. And I thought Taron Egerton should have been nominated for an Oscar. He won the Golden Globe, didn't even get a nomination for the Oscar. Criminal.
I think this is an interesting format because it's 4 separate films, but there is a part of me that's going to be like, who's banging on the door to see about George? You know what I mean? And I, again, all respect to George, I'm not a huge Beatles fan, so like, please don't scream at me. But like,
Well, the Thomas the Tank Engine years. That's probably a whole half hour.
What
was that, Ringo? Sorry, yeah. Whoops. Yeah.
Don't erase Ringo from the Thomas the Tank Engine.
Don't text in. I've already been corrected. All right. Save your fingers there. Has either of you seen the Bob Dylan thing yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
That is a lot of potential to be very good. The Robbie Williams as a monkey biopic.
Okay, now I'd look at that. Robbie Williams as a monkey is an interesting innovation way of doing it.
Yeah.
I take the listener's point. I feel like we're kind of in a flop era of them, but maybe we're coming out of it. I don't know. I think the four films, I think it's an interesting way to look at how the stories diverge and come back together and stuff.
It's either everything's a music biopic or a franchise sequel edition or something like that. Because like the top 10 movies at the box office at the moment are all sequels or like franchise films. Like, it's wild.
Maybe it's us. Maybe it's our fault, human beings. or people who go to see movies. Maybe that's what it is.
We have some wine.
Let's have some wine. Yes, Jean.
Yeah, I think we need it at this stage. Right. Our first wine is a white Cote d'Aron. Everybody, Cote d'Aron is a wine style that people more associate with red wine. This is the 2023 Chateau Beauchesne. It's Cote d'Aron Grand Reserve Blanc, €20. Normally in Whelehan Wine, it's from Whelehan Wines. Normally it's €20, but he's got it on offer for 15 until December 15th or 31st. Actually, I've just realised that David has been running his shop for a decade now. I remember when he opened it in 2014. That seems like 2 minutes ago, right? And it's Silver Tassie. It's an iconic place there on the N11 in South County, Dublin.
My granddad used to be the manager.
Really? In the Silver Tassie?
In the Silver Tassie.
That was a great pub.
Yeah,
oh,
awesome.
It really was.
Yeah.
It's a great wine shop too. Yeah. Let's be honest now. So, right. So the Chateau Beauchesne estate is close to the city of Orange. It's been run by the Bernard family since 1794, so they're not blow-ins. Michel and Dominique Bernard run it, and now their daughters Amandine and Estelle, who are the 11th generation of their family to produce wine. So this has a bit of heritage here. Like a red Côte d'Aron, white Côte d'Aron is a blend, and the grape varieties here are Claret, Grenache Blanc, Roussin, Marsan, and Bourbelec. One of the thing about those grapes, particularly the Roussin and the Marsan, they're very aromatic. They really are. They're lovely. They've got this, all is lovely. The Grenache Blanc is more acidic, and the Bourbelec is certainly acidity. So what you get are these lovely floral aromas with a hint of honey. And you certainly, if you stick your nose in there, you can really smell the honey coming through. This is to me the ultimate food wine, right? It's not like yet another Sauvignon Blanc or yet another Pinot Grigio. It's got a bit more depth to it, right? So, you know, if you want to be a bit more adventurous on your food choices this weekend or this Christmas, the structure and flavour profile and the weight, I mean, if you taste it, you're getting that kind of, not a lot of acidity there. It's definitely more, there's a weighty, oily texture to it. So it'll go with turkey and ham, no problem. For pescatarians, roast salmon. But it's also great for the veggies. It'll, you know, whatever, cream spinach, asparagus, you know, all the various nut roast dishes. It'll go very well with that. So it's kind of an all-rounder. So it's, you know, if you're looking for something to you know, a white to go with various styles of food on Christmas Day, then take a look at the Chateau Beauchesne Côte d'Aron Grand Reserve Blanc on offer at €15 in Whelan's until December 31st.
Okay, lovely, Jean. I was in Germany last week and had some delicious Glühwein.
Glühwein, yes. Oh, I know how to make Glühwein. It's really good. A friend of mine, Sani Knackstetter was her name, about 40 years taught me how to make it. Basically, the trick to it is, don't boil the wine. But what they have in Germany is they have these sugar cones, right? And what you do is you pour spirit into the sugar cone and you set fire and it melts the sugar into the wine, and it gives it. Now, the sugar, obviously, because it's burned, the alcohol is burned off, but it gives an absolutely gorgeous texture. Oh. That's how they make Glühwein in Germany.
Can you just buy it here?
You can, actually. Notice a lot of the German discount supermarkets have it.
Ah, right. Well, there you go.
They certainly have it. You can buy it, and I'm sure other supermarkets have it as well. It's very much and the whole thing is the amount of spices you put in. And the homemade stuff is really great. And it's all about putting lots of cinnamon sticks and cloves and the whole lot. And maybe, you know, put the cloves in the orange, and when you're heating the wine, put it in it. And it's actually a lovely drink. Really, really
is. There's
also
some people who put brandy in it afterwards as well, which I think is wild.
Yeah. Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
Or your glue wine in this case.
Somebody wants to know, I wonder who's playing Pete Best in the Beatles movies. Have they said that?
Have not heard.
Yeah.
Have not heard.
Yeah, just the only rumours have been for the main four.
Yeah.
I'm German. The best way to buy Glühwein is to buy the ready mix one in Lidl or Aldi. So just as exactly as Jean said there. A lot of people texting in to say how wrong you are. Definitely not Rocket Man, but Walk the Line was good.
Yeah, that was good.
But how far back are we going then? 2005?
Yeah.
Surely there's a more recent... Elvis, as you've like
Elvis, I didn't like.
Yeah,
yeah, like Elvis is very divisive for people, so I don't know.
Rocket Man was a travesty. Musicals and music are two ends of a spectrum, and musicals are on the wrong end of that spectrum. Rob says the Kneecap movie, best band movie in years, way better than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
something to offend anyone there.
They're kind of taking a different take on it because they're playing themselves, obviously, and it's dramatized and everything else. But
somebody else who may have been at the Christmas party last night's a bit hungover, feeling a bit cranky, says biopic, not biopic. Okay, fair enough. We'll speak quietly just for you. So which biopic are we going to be talking about next?
I think we're going to go for the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings coming up after this.
The wisest move is to fall back to our strongholds. Light the beacons. Call for aid from Gondor.
The wisest move? You would have me abandon Edoras.
Until we are at full strength. Yes, this is no rabble of wild men. These men are well-trained and well-armed.
I pledge 300 riders to protect the eastern flank. The men of the wold stand ready to fight.
I accept your pledge. Lord Thorne shall have command of the east. I will lead the vanguard north and meet Wolf on the plains.
That's Lord of the Rings, A War of the Rohirrim. Now you see, and Brian Cox is another one. I was just waiting for Brian Cox to tell him to F off. You know? You can't take him seriously now.
But you know what? For the characterization, he is actually the perfect voice because Helm Hammerhand is... Do you know what? If you're trying to picture him, he's a bit like, he looks a bit like Santa with like long white hair, big white beard, but he's also like 6-7 feet high and nearly as wide as well. So like he's a big sort of like powerful looking figure. And with Brian Cox's voice, it works so, so well. But yeah, sometimes you're kind of like, that's just Brian Cox.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a Succession fan.
And so does the world building work as well as it would in your regular... you know, live action.
Yeah, so basically there's a lot of the team from the original live action films that are involved in this. Philippa Bowens is, it's like based on a story that she came up with, and her daughter and her writing partner are the two that have actually penned the script. So there's a lot of influence from the main team. So they've very much kept it in theme with all of the other live action films. And maybe to a certain extent, you could also do a comparison with The Rings of Power, but definitely not to the same extent. It is a new story. It is only based on characters that were just briefly mentioned. And actually our heroine, Hera, she wasn't even given a name in the appendices. So she was just referred to as the daughter. The two sons, her brothers, they are named, but she never was. So they came up with the name for her, and she is basically the one leading the charge. And then the story is being told by Eowyn, who is again voiced by Miranda Otto, and she's the one narrating the story throughout. And they start off and they do the original, like the world building, looking at the map and talking about like, the world of Rohan, and you do get sucked right back into that Lord of the Ringsy world. And then there's this beautiful transition from that kind of painting style animation to real animation, but it looks like it's live action, but it's still animated. It's just really, really stunning and eye-catching, and you're just drawn in immediately.
Yeah, and there's always a difficulty with these kind of origin story type things that you know what happens next or you know what happens afterwards. So where's, you know...
Where's the mystery?
Where's the mystery? Where's the wanting to keep watching to see what happens?
And because you're going to kind of assume that if Helm's Deep is named after Helm Hammerhand, you know, he's either going to sort of die in battle or he's going to do something else that's equally heroic that's going to warrant him earning the honour. And so you are kind of like, you're unsure as to which way it's going to go throughout most of the film, which I kind of liked. But also you're not really sure what's going to happen to Hera at the end, because of course she is a princess and they want her to be wedded to someone. And that's actually kind of how the battle kicks off, because they challenge the throne, because she was like, I don't want to marry Wolf, like not a hope in hell. You're kind of wondering, like, is she going to like continue being this like free spirit, or is she going to end up doing what all princesses have had to do over the years and go and marry someone and go live in Gondor or whatever? So you do have that kind of curiosity because it is that like middle ground. So it's set 200 years before the events of The Hobbit. And it's set like thousands of years after the Rings of Power. So it is this kind of era that we don't really know a lot about. Like Sauron is still skulking away. The ring is over with Gollum in the caves. So it is just a completely unexplored territory at the time. And we don't really know that many stories from here. So it is still brand new information, but
in a very familiar setting, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So this is really only for fans of Lord of the Rings. Let's fill in a bit of the backstory.
See,
for the ordinary viewer, they go...
Yes and no, because I kind of actually think that both Lord of the Rings fans and anime fans are going to really like it because... Okay. With the way the character design is, with the way that some of the action sequences are, and even some of the language used in the actual dialogue as well, it is still very much in keeping with anime. And I think that's such an interesting twist to put on it, that they got the balance so well done that I was just really, really surprised. Because usually you'd kind of say, maybe not polarizing kind of fan bases, but they wouldn't necessarily overlap very often. But for this, it's, you know, very clearly something that's made for both audiences. And I just was really, really stunned by it.
Yeah. OK. And this is in cinemas.
It is in cinemas now. Yes.
Yeah. How much, somebody wants to know how much of it was actually written by Tolkien?
So none of it was written by Tolkien. So basically the characters are just named in the appendices. So usually that just means that they're kind of just like hinted at. So it's like, oh, Helm Hammerhand ruled during this era.
Yeah.
And
okay.
this was his son. This is his other son. And then this is his daughter. And that's literally all the information that they've based this off.
Okay. Eric says he's never got Lord of the Rings. People love it so much. He even gets critical credit as well. Am I the only one who thinks it's a load of special effects nonsense? I'm sure that's not the case. Somebody else says, interestingly, Helm Hammerhand also appeared in the hentai porn movie I was watching yesterday.
Oh my God.
Somebody else says, biopic and biopic pronunciation is unresolved.
Take that.
Somebody says biopic sounds like a minor medical procedure. It is, actually. I had one myself a few weeks back. Haven't been able to sit right since. Rocket Man is a terrible movie. It's a movie made by Elton, about Elton, by Elton, for Elton, says Ed. Also, there's nothing you can't be corrected on, Jane. Glue wine with a sugar cone and spirit is technically a different drink. It's called a Fürsgenbowl. Sorry, I spoke German there. You probably didn't get that.
I didn't understand what you were saying. Yes. You spoke it so well, though,
thank
Sean.
Thank you. Yeah, it was like we were there. Mark says, I don't want to come off as pedantic like the porn guy earlier, but while Kneecap was great, I don't think it's really a music biopic or biopic as it's fictionalized, says Mark.
Well,
aren't they all fictionalized?
Yeah,
I mean,
remember the great film about the groupie? What was that one called? It was 30 years. It was in the 80s or 90s.
Almost Famous?
Yay, that's the one. Okay. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That was actually very good.
I hope they make the Madonna one eventually.
Yeah.
But she has too much control over it.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's the thing.
So Cillian Murphy isn't in 28 years later.
He's not. The trailer for it came out this week and there was a lot of speculation that he was making he's not in the main cast, but you know, he's making a special little cameo, obviously, because he's such a big part of the previous films. In the trailer, you can see at one point there's this like really skeletal zombie rises from the ground behind Jodie Comer. And everyone thought that, This is such potentially an insult to Cillian. So Cillian, if you're listening, I'm really sorry. This isn't me. This is the internet. Basically, everyone was like, oh, the skeleton looks like Cillian, right?
Yeah.
So it was like, it must be this homage to, but he's not in it, but he is a bit in it. It has been confirmed that that is not, in fact, Cillian Murphy. It was actually this newcomer called Angus Neil, also moonlights as an art dealer. Director Danny Boyle saw him, was struck by his distinctive looks and cast him. So,
right.
Which again, I'm kind of like, Danny Boy looked at you and said, you're giving zombie, here's contract.
Yeah.
I'm not, again, Angus is like two thumbs up. I feel like I'd be like, get away from me.
Yeah. And was this all shot on an iPhone or just the trailer was shot?
No, the whole thing is shot on iPhone 15s, which I thought was so interesting. They're all shot on iPhone 15 Pro Max. But I think the whole point again of like this franchise is that it's all kind of not necessarily found footage, but like all like that it was shot at the time.
Yeah.
So it kind of it actually does make a lot of sense. It's made me very, very intrigued to go see it. And if you haven't seen the trailer, go watch it because it's so freaky. It's really creepy.
They clearly knew what they were doing as well by putting that clip into the trailer, because that's all anybody has been talking about is wondering if it's Cillian Murphy or not.
Yeah.
So I think it was a very deliberate choice.
Yeah. You know what? It got me questioning. So that's out on June 20th next year.
Okay, so Love is Blind contestants, apparently in the US anyway, they're now classed as employees. So they got like pension rights and stuff.
Kind of, yeah. I just thought this was interesting because particularly with Love is Blind, which is this Netflix reality show in which people sign up to the show and they want to prove whether love is blind. So they end up going on dates with people, but they don't end up seeing them until after they've decided to get engaged to each other. It is as mad as I've just described it. Like, there's no getting around that. There have been a lot of contestants have come out recently and other reality TV stars, and they've been kind of they've been calling for better rights for reality TV stars because, like, they're making all these franchises a lot of money and, you know, there's no residuals when it comes to reality TV and stuff like that. So yeah, as you said, the National Labour Review Board in the US has ruled that the contestants on Love is Blind are employees. They're not contractors, because that's what the production company had tried to, they were trying to argue that.
Sure.
But yeah, basically, yeah, as I said, a lot of the show's producers are at odds with a lot of the contestants because they're coming out saying, you know, that they've been very unfairly treated, like they're being faced with a lot of gag orders. Their ability to earn money kind of after the show is very limited. So I feel like this is kind of maybe might end up being a little bit of a watershed moment for the series, maybe for reality TV overall, because the conversation kind of seemed to have had stalled for a while. I know Bethany Frankel had come out last year. She's a former Real Housewives of New York, but like has been on lots of other reality shows, and she was trying to organise last year and get participants in reality shows like better pay, more protections, stuff like that. But as I said, that had kind of stalled. I think her lawyer is now representing some of the other Love is Blind contestants as well, including Renee Poach. She says she was misled and punished by producers of the series for speaking out about her experience, and the solicitor there was saying cast members are stripped of fundamental rights, gagged from speaking out, denied legal recourse, paid virtually nothing, subjected to the ever-present threat of ruinous liquidated damages and prevented from working elsewhere. These practices must stop. So I'm wondering, like, what will happen with
it'd be interesting
seasons.
To say what rights they would actually have if their class is employees.
Yeah. Because you're joking about pensions and stuff, but like if you were an employee, like I mean, they can obviously unionise now if they're considered employees, you know? So then what does that, how does that implicate, or what's the implication for that at the show?
If you're in a virtual reality, but in one of these so-called reality TV shows and you have the rights of an employee, that means you can only be fired under certain circumstances. And, you know, are those circumstances the audience voted you out or you tested badly and... The producers kicked you out, then they wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, and on Love is Blind, no one is voted out. There's no voting. It's like you either get married or you don't. So you can like choose to leave the process or you can stay in.
Yeah.
But as you said, if you're not testing well and they're like, we'll get rid of them. If you're an employee, and even if you're still testing badly, do you just hang around? Do you just, are you on season 85 still looking for love? I don't know. Getting paid?
Ooh, that would be a good one.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Slade.
Well, actually, there is one there. Unless they are literally blind at that point. And that offers it a bit more reality, I would have thought. According to Eamon, Die Hard 2 is based on a book called 58 Minutes, and it was originally going to be Commando 2. There just shows go. How interesting.
Isn't the
just
John
swap
McClane,
the stories around.
Truly.
The John McClane character is based on a book character that was actually first played by Frank Sinatra. So Frank Sinatra had first refusal on the original Die Hard.
Wow.
Oh my God.
It would have been a totally different film.
Where is that Die Hard?
Schmoozing up the toilet.
I know, Frank was a good, Frankie was a great actor.
He was.
He was brilliant in that.
He would have been in his 70s trying to do all that.
I would love to see it.
He would have just rung up his mafia pals to take him out. So tell us.
Okay, this is the 2022 Vina Leda Las Brisas Pinot Noir, available in O'Brien's, 1895. This comes from Leda Valley, and the first time I went to Chile was in 2002, and Leda Valley at that stage was just, it was up in the north of Chile, and it was where they used to just grow a lot of wheat. And in fact, I remember being there in 2006, and it was literally a greenfield site, and they'd only started planting it. What made the difference was they ran a water pipe from the Maipo Valley up to Leda, because they needed water to grow the vines, and they've turned the whole region into one of the best cool climate regions in northern Chile. Leda is really good for cool climate grapes like Sauvignon Blanc or Chardonnay or Riesling or in fact Pinot Noir. So, and the winery Vina Leda, and normally they'd never get away with being allowed to call the winery and the region the same name, but the winery was the first in, so they kind of got away with it. It was founded in 1997. So, look, this is they make great wines in this region. And this particular wine is made by Viviana Novetti, and she's the chief winemaker at Vinalada. And in 2020, she was recognised by Wine Enthusiast as one of the top 13 female winemakers in the world. And she's actually the only South American woman. So this has actually got a lot of credibility behind it. It's a super wine. It's like Las Brisas is the name of the sea breeze that directly hits the slopes where the grapes are grown. It's oak aged. It has lots of fruit. I mean, just have a sip. So let's talk about turkey. Dry old bird. I've never been able to cook it successfully. And I like the amount of times I've cooked a Christmas dinner in the last 25 years is like once. I'm terrible at it. My sister does it. Thank you, Jill. So what you need, what you put with turkey? Cranberry sauce. What do you need? A wine that has lots of fruit in it. Lots of juicy fruit. This has lots of juicy fruit. Ergo, perfect with your turkey. So right, the Vinalada Las Brisas Pinot Noir, normally priced $18.95, but it's on offer in O'Brien's for $15.95. And at that price, great value. So snap it up.
Richard the Thatcher says Spinal Tap has to be one of the best music biopics ever made.
Yes.
Though if they ever make Crystal Swing, the demonic years, it would be a fad movie. I think that's in discussion. John says now, Olivia did look it up and Frank Sinatra was offered Die Hard. John says Frank Sinatra actually turned down Dirty Harry, not Die Hard. At 5'7", the Magnum gun was too big for him. John Wayne also turned it down and regretted the decision. I don't know about the John Wayne one, but you're wrong about the Frank Sinatra one, John, unfortunately.
He may have turned down Dirty Harry as well, but he did also definitely he had to be offered the role of John McClane before they could greenlight Bruce Willis in the role.
Okay. Crikey. Like, you couldn't think of two more different actors.
Yeah, yeah. Because he played the role in another film earlier on. So yeah, basically, when they were doing the reboot, it was in his previous contract that they had to offer him the role if they were ever to do a sequel. So technically, Die Hard is a sequel.
Ah, Die Hard is a reboot. Yeah.
Yeah, when you
see,
think about
they
it.
Were doing it even then. which makes the next piece of news a bit more digestible. Meet the Parents 4. In which Ben Stiller is wheeled up in a wheelchair to meet the cryogenically frozen remains.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I mean, it's, again, it's not 100% confirmed, but it's, again, pretty much. Well, sorry, the iteration is confirmed, but in terms of casting, we're still waiting on 100% confirmation on that. But Ben Stiller is in talks, Robert De Niro is in talks, Blythe Danner are in talks, Terry Polo all in talks to return. John Hamburg, who wrote the previous films, is on board and set to write the screenplay. No plot details yet. Like, this is the fourth entry. You kind of forget how successful it was, because I know like the third film is essentially unwatchable in my opinion, but it's one of the most highest grossing comedy franchises of all time. Like, it grossed over 1.13 billion at the box office. So I mean, I get it, but it's giving, they're all broke. Again, Robert De Niro's 8,000 children at this point. He's like, right, that's, I have true, to put some of them through college. You know what I mean? I don't know about the rest of them. To Ben Stiller, I say, why are you signing up to this? You have Severance to work on. There's at least two more seasons out of that. And that's good. So work on that, not this. But yeah, that this is coming imminently. Like, what are they going to, is it focusing on the kids then? And they all are obviously older. I don't know. I don't care. I'm usually like, I try not to be cynical about the rebooty stuff. This, maybe it's just because I'm not a huge fan of the franchise in general, but yeah.
Well, might it be that Ben Stiller is the parent this time or Robert De Niro is the grandparent?
Oh,
or is it some sort of weird Mormon thing?
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, there's multiple.
Maybe.
I don't mind it if it is that Ben Stiller is now the parent, that he's meeting the new, like, one of his children's partners for the first time or something.
That would make more sense.
But is he, can you buy him in that role? Can you buy him as the Robert De Niro?
Not really, because he's too neurotic.
Yeah.
He's too neurotic. You know, a funny thing like, during the week, we have a parenting slot. And a question came in this week about a kid who'd seen, I forget what age he was, but he was 9 or 10 maybe. And he'd seen The Witches, the 1990s movie, and couldn't sleep because of it.
God.
Even though that kid, that movie's supposed to be like, you know, for kids.
Mm.
Because it's PG. And Joanna Fortune said the two films that are mentioned most that are giving kids nightmares are The Witches and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
With the Child Catcher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the clues in the name. Yeah.
Brace yourself, children. Now they're going to make one with real blood.
We're getting another one. Yeah, reimagined film adaptations in development with Amazon, MGM Studios. Barbara Broccoli, our good Bond gal, is working on it. Very early stages. They're still looking at potential writers and directors. Absolutely no cast in mind. They're looking at a theatrical release, even though this is Amazon. But again, in researching this, like, I didn't realise that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is based on a book that was written by the guy who wrote James Bond. Yes. I did not make that connection at all.
Oh, that's right. When I yes.
And Dick Van Dyke is 99 today.
Yeah, fair dues, Dick.
He'll probably be back in it. Dick Van Dyke, by the time this movie comes out, Dick Van Dyke will still be alive and will be making a cameo.
I was like, how cheeky of them to like literally announce it on his 99th birthday, to be like, happy birthday, mate. We're going to remake one of your biggest films.
Yeah. What child? Do we still care about singing cars? I don't know. The car doesn't sing. Sorry, the car flies.
The car flies.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen
this. And it's a boat as well.
Yeah. Jean's very defensive of this. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't particularly care. But again, maybe if they're making it newfangled.
I don't know. It's just a weird. Don't understand the world anymore. Anyway, our second movie is Carry On. Here's a clip.
Ethan, today is a day that you're going to remember for a very long time. But if you handle it right, you're going to have a chance to forget it.
Hello?
One bag for one life.
Excuse me?
That's the deal. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, nice try, Eddie. I hope you rap better than you prank or I'm out $2.
Eddie's in lane one driving his first Maybach. Just relax, okay? This is how it goes, Ethan. Soon, an associate of mine is going to step into your line with a boarding pass for Northwind Flight 1850 nonstop to JFK. You are going to make sure that his bag clears the machine.
This is a joke, right?
Is anything I just said funny?
So, Elton John is in an airport.
With an American accent. Elton,
yes. Right, so Taron Egerton's character works in the airport, does he?
He does, yeah. So he is the TSA agent and he's kind of just like trudging through life, just found out that the girlfriend is pregnant and she's kind of like trying to encourage him to try and get back into applying for the police force. And he's like, oh, I don't know, I think I'd rather just get a promotion here. So he is given this opportunity to actually work the machine. So he's the one like keeping an eye on like what everything is going through on the scanner. And like what he doesn't know is that actually there's a group of terrorists that were already targeting his colleague and were ready to kidnap the colleague's family and hold them hostage in order for him to let all of the... So it's basically this nerve agent that they're trying to get through the machines and onto the plane. And when they look and they go, oh, that's not the guy. He's not supposed to be there. So there had been like a last minute swap. So then they have to regroup, try and find out some stuff on Ethan to basically get him to cooperate. And then it all kind of goes to hell.
Right. Okay. And do they want to get this nerve agent onto the plane so they can release it on the plane, or are they posting it someplace?
Yeah, they're hoping to release it on the plane. Okay. And then there's a couple of incidences where you don't know whether they're just going to try and release it in the airport if they can't get it through. There's all of these threats. Jason Bateman, who you heard there, he is actually the kind of leader of this group and he's the one that's in on the earpiece that they give to Ethan. So that's how they're kind of like communicating. But they also have an eye in the sky, so to speak, where Tio Rossi's character is in a van parked outside and he's keeping an eye on all of the security cameras. So he can see that if Ethan is trying to like ring the police, he can see if he's like doing like this text message through his watch, and they keep making him like lock all of his stuff away in the lost and found case, things like that. So like they do a great job at the beginning of building up all of this tension. The downside is that kind of goes on for a little bit too long. Then once you kind of get into the more action-y sort of side of the film, that also kind of lasts a little bit too long. Like they had a lot of really great ideas, but unfortunately, instead of just being like, okay, well, instead of doing all of it, we'll just take like this one, this one, this one. But then they kind of went, ah, no, it should be grand. We'll just do it all. And yeah, some of it just doesn't connect as well. And it's kind of like, okay, here's a twist. Oh, here's another twist. Oh, that twist now contradicts the other one. So now we're back to over here. And so it kind of just goes on for a little bit too long, but I will say that the ending was quite satisfactory. It's not like,
okay, satisfactory.
Yeah, yeah,
that's one for the poster, isn't it?
Satisfactory.
Yeah.
Well, it's just the see, I can't, don't want to spoil it, but the way that they say resolve matters.
Mm.
there's a very satisfying moment in that, shall we
okay.
say.
Okay. One listener wants to know, does anyone say, ooh, matron, at some stage?
No, they don't. No, yeah. They don't, unfortunately. But yeah, it is another one. It's set at Christmas, so it's technically a Christmas film. So.
Okay, and is it, it's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix now, yeah.
Okay, there you go. There's one of your Christmas films for you. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Fionnuala and Jean and Olivia.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.